Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Ventura Center for Spiritual Living. It's great to see you here today, the few of you that are here, and it's wonderful to know that people are watching at home too, continuing to share the love and spread the love and just be the love that we are. So thank you so much for joining us, and I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Lonnie.
Good morning, everyone. So I think we kind of have a very exciting morning, like many. But for me, this proves that there's consistency and uncertainty. Because when I first came to the center, the teachers that I met were Reverend Susan Burrell and Reverend Bonnie Rose. So that was almost 15 years ago.
No.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. So while it may seem that things are uncertain, we're here for you. We're anchored in knowing that we will all get through this, and there is certainty. So settle in, have some fun, and just be with each other.
Thank you so much, Lonnie. I appreciate that. I didn't know we were getting so old 15 years ago. Wow, who knew? All right, so we're calling forth one of our wonderful youth and family folks, Bill Hadriss, who's going to enlighten us with youth and family wisdom.
Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
I'd love to invite any children that want to come down and stand here with us for the children's message.
Hey, kiddos.
Go ahead and stand up here behind me, guys, so they can see you too on camera. Cool. Right up here. Awesome. As Reverend Bonnie said, I'm Bill Hadriss with Youth and Family. And I'd like to start with, this new year, as we begin our journey through the year, we take a moment to take stock of where we are and we plan a route. Many of you have already set goals for this new year. Did you guys set them? That's okay. There's still time. Don't worry. Working towards a goal is like playing a game. It feels great to win, but more joy can be found in the journey of playing the game. How we show up to play makes a difference in how much fun we can have. Playing a game from a place of the God qualities we want to embody can bring us harmony, tranquility, peacefulness, whether we win or lose. So how do we embody God's qualities? Well, that sounds like it can be overwhelming, right? But I've got an easy way to start. I'd like you to think of your favorite animal. Or any animal if you want. You guys think of an animal?
Anybody?
Think of an animal?
Newt.
Newt?
You thought of a newt? Awesome. What? What qualities does a newt have?
I don't know what qualities are.
You don't know. Okay. Well, what do you like about newts?
I think they camouflage, and I think that's why I like them.
Awesome. They camouflage. Very cool. They have ability to blend in with their surroundings and be at peace with the world. Awesome. Well, that's something we can embody too as we go forth. So, along with your goals, I'd like you to write down those qualities you're going to embrace over the next year and keep those in mind. So with that, I invite you to repeat after me a quote from Ernest Holmes. New conditions are being created for me. Conditions of harmony, happiness, peace, and joy. And so it is. Thank you. Thank you.
So if I can have the ministers and the practitioners join me in prayer by standing. And the same for those of you that are watching. Let's just take a moment now to close our eyes and turn within. Where we turn within and we can just delight in remembering that there truly is only one life. That one life is God's life. That one life is perfect, whole, and complete. That one life is the very essence of who each and every one of us are. That as we close our eyes and just take that moment to breathe in that truth, we can simply relax in that knowing that absolutely everything is okay. And that we get through absolutely everything because we have the source behind us that's powerful, full of strength, and most importantly, full of love. And all of that is who we are. And so I know that this service is totally blessed. I know that what we are inside, the thing that is going to unite us all together is just the beautiful words spoken by both Reverend Bonnie and Reverend Susan, that the message that they have for us today fully inspires us, lifts us up, and helps us to remember the truth of who we really are. And knowing that every part of this service, the music, those that have come together to serve in ways that are always a mystery to all of us, that all of this just happens so beautifully here every Sunday, that all of this, again, is God working through us as us perfectly. And so blessing this service, blessing everyone here and beyond, I just say thank you, thank you, thank you, God, and I release this word into the power of the law, and so it is. Amen.
Thank you, Doreen. Thank you so much, Doreen. And just resting in this place, in this presence of knowing that all is well, that the peace of spirit fills us, whether we call it God or higher power or love, whatever it is here right now with us and always. And so we rest in that presence as we listen to the words of our sacred reading.
The evolution of love from the luminous landscape of the afterlife by Matthew McKay. This is why we're here, to discover love. The divine, the whole, all that is, could not love when it was one undifferentiated consciousness. Because love is an experience that requires duality. It occurs at the junction of two or more consciousness. So the divine had to divide into parts, souls, oversouls, conscious entities, in order to experience love. But there was a problem. In the spirit world, love happens automatically. It just happens because the entities, while separate, are also fused into one. The love isn't forged, chosen, or created, because all or one experience makes love necessary, determined, and unchosen. While deeply satisfying and very beautiful, even blissful, this uncreated, unchosen love is incomplete. Only with complete separation, an illusion formed by our incarnation on Earth and other planets, can love finally be created intentionally and fully evolve from something that just is, to something that generates and grows. Our journey here and the aloneness our souls feel in this place is a necessity for the evolution of love. The divine grows in its knowledge of love as we do. The trajectory of consciousness on Earth is moving from selfishness, protecting and preserving the life of the individual, to community, to oneness, all fueled by intentional love. There are hundreds of ways to manifest love on earth. Healing, holding, community building, protecting, teaching, cleaning, beautifying, giving, joining, sacrificing, witnessing another's pain, caring and supporting in the face of pain, yearning, grieving, taking a blow meant for another, paying attention or seeing, surrendering, compassion, and so many others. Most of these forms of love are unavailable in the spirit world, but they teach lessons we couldn't learn otherwise. All of them advance the conscious discovery of love.
And so it is. And so the principle in that reading is that love is all there is, which is what we teach here, that everything is love, and that love needs to appear separate from love, born into this world of duality, so that it might experience the divine remembrance of itself through everything that we go through our joys and our sorrows, through our triumphs and our tribulations, that it's all love seeking to be born. And yet we come together in spaces like this where we remember the truth behind all appearances. We remember the I Am Presence. The I Am Presence is another name for God, which is another name for love, which is another name for wholeness, which is another name for spirit or higher power. And so today, we sing about that which is beyond words. We sing together, I am remembering who I am. And of course, in deep and kind consideration of our neighbors, we place our masks firmly over our noses and our mouths, and we sing together, I am remembering. God has a sense of humor. I'm not sure exactly what that was about, other than God has a sense of humor and how fun it is to be able to laugh. Let's just rest in that divine remembrance. that is not dependent on any conditions whatsoever, but it is beneath and beyond and above and through and around all conditions, that pure awareness that is the truth of who we are, that sacred being that guards us, guides us, and protects us through all things, that place from which we have come, that place to where we return, that place that we can be right now as we remember. Let us breathe in deeply and then exhale, opening our eyes in love and in service to what is as it is, and so it is. Thank you.
Thank you.
say a few words. Thank you so much, Kayla and Chris. Really appreciate that. So beautiful. I feel like my guest this morning needs no introduction. A lot of you know Reverend Susan Burrell, and I'm going to let her introduce herself. Susan has been my friend for, I don't know, how many years? Plus, because we knew each other back in my former church, North Hollywood, and here she is in this church now, and I'm just going to call her forward. Come on up, Susan. Let's give her a lot of love. Yeah, it's great to see you.
It's good to see you, and it's good to see so many people here, because when Bonnie and I were talking, we were kind of like, we don't know if people are going to feel like they want to come out, so thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being here. It's great to see you. Thank you also for wearing your masks and being socially distanced. Okay. So Susan, since not everybody here knows you as I do, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
I am a science of mind minister, and when I came out of the School of Ministry with a master's in consciousness, now isn't that the silliest thing you've ever heard? Who masters consciousness? I haven't, but anyway, I got one.
Mine is a master's in divinity, and there you go, there goes that.
You're a little bit higher than me.
I don't know about the divinity, yeah.
But so anyway. I started a broadcast radio program called Live Your Inspired Life. It broadcasts in the Ventura County, parts of LA and Santa Barbara, and it was teaching science of mind, but kind of under the radar, because I didn't straight up say I'm a minister. I wanted to just speak these principles of science of mind out over the airwaves so that anybody listening, hopefully, would hear it, and that divine spark within all of us would ignite and go, I'm hearing truth. So I did that. It's now morphed into a podcast called Empowering Chats with Susan Burrell. And I'm still teaching principle. I'm still a little bit not out of the box with saying I'm a minister because,
people are scared of ministers.
They are. They give you that weird eye look, right?
Yeah.
And they go like.
Yeah, so we have to do stealth ministry.
Right.
Right, okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, I gotcha. Great. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
So you're getting ready to teach this book. Did you bring it?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a book over there that Susan's getting ready to teach. She's teaching a class in our center called The Luminous Landscape of the Afterlife. And I'm curious, before we talk about how you came into contact with this book, tell us a little bit about how this book came into being.
Oh, well, and I do have a theory that that might be what was happening with that song.
So
a young man named Jordan McKay was going home from wherever he was going home from, and he was violently attacked and murdered, and he crossed over. And his father, Matthew McKay, was grieving so deeply, missing his son, he started learning how to channel and communicate with his son. So this is the third book they've written together. Jordan's on the other side, and his father is still incarnated here. And that fascinated me, because I've always been interested in what happens in the afterlife. What does it look like, feel like, smell like, all that, you know? And this book describes it, because Jordan really wants us to understand, before we make our transition, what it's like on the other side. And since I've been reading it, Bonnie, a couple of times now, what I'm recognizing is if we live spiritual principle now, which is really being loved to the fullest ability, right, that we can do, that opens up when we make our transition. We automatically move into that vibration of love, which is how everyone communicates in the afterlife, all the souls that cross over. And if you're in fear, like Ernest Holmes talks about, if you're in fear in this lifetime and you're not handling those scary thoughts, you know, if you're not transmuting those belief systems you grew up with that make you scared or angry, then you just bring that over into the other side. So Jordan has incarnated a couple of times too, evidently. But he really wants to create, with the book, an understanding. And for me, when I read it, it was what I already kind of practiced and believed, but it just upped my game. You know, it upped my vibration of love and practicing that on a more regular basis. Mm,
that's awesome. Yeah. So we're going to get to that, your practice, in just a minute. Okay. But I want to hear, I know, it's like there's so many ways we could go with this, because I love this topic. You mentioned that sounds like Kayla picked the perfect song.
What? Oh, what?
Yeah.
Yes.
So tell us about that.
Well, the second one she's going to sing?
Oh, that one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, we're all.
Yeah, that's a surprise.
Sing.
Yeah.
First of all, the reading.
Yeah.
Was I wanted to stand up and do a happy dance. It got me so excited because I really think that's who we are and why we're here. But then this new life, creating a new life and new love and being in that and our human idea of what true love is, it ain't necessarily so. It really, really is.
That's a song too, by the
it
way.
It is. Yes. I love putting
it. Me too.
But it really is that this... love that is beyond description, really, is that oneness that we are all always in. And when we incarnate here, we forget because we look different or we, whatever, grow up in a different country.
Maybe there's a stupid pandemic going around.
And there's a stupid pandemic going on
which
that's
is
making
love
everybody crazy.
In its own way, yeah. It's
yeah.
love in its own way, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, again, to refresh us about the point of the reading, you know, it's that love... And this is so hard to explain in a metaphysical church, but I'm going to try again based on that reading because it was so beautifully written by you, Kim. And by the way, my husband is fine. He's home because of transportation issues. Long story, but anyway. He usually does the readings in case you don't know. But anyway, you know, that love needs to almost take on the illusion of being separate from love so that love can find love again. And you know how it is like when you get a present and it's so much more exciting if there's a present that's wrapped up and you open it and you get to open your own present and go through that period of discovery. That's what I hear with what Kim read, is that love wants to discover itself in all kinds of beautiful and wonderful ways. And in the book it says something, which I just loved, and I'll share this and then back to you. I get carried away. In the book it said something about, like, imagine a father building a playhouse for his child. And the father's too big to get into the playhouse, but he can send the child into the playhouse, and the child can explore every little nook and cranny and every experience in that playhouse and then come back and report to the father, and the father grows through that. And if you don't like the word father, use the word mother, by all means. You know, it goes back, and that's like a metaphor for our relationship with spirit, is that spirit has created us to explore every nook and cranny of this playhouse that we call planet Earth and perhaps other planets as well. And then we come back and we share that experience with spirit, or we share it as we're doing it, and then spirit gets to expand in that way too. Isn't that remarkable?
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. What a beautiful explanation in this thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the part about that of expanding ourselves when we're here and growing spirit more, then why not? Why not be our best version of ourselves? You know, why not stop hiding from ourselves? I had that experience this morning where I was like, oh my God, I'm still hiding in that area of my mind. But why not just be fully who we are?
Yeah.
And that is being love and being, and Bill's, I love how this works here, you know,
yes,
because
yeah.
Bill's message, his affirmation is I don't know if he got in my brain, is the exact affirmation I'm using this year to be happy and harmonious and joyful and,
yeah.
You know, why not just be that?
Yeah.
Let's just do it together.
Well, here's another coincidence.
Yeah?
Yes. When I read Daily Good this morning, which is an online magazine, the quote for Daily Good was from Ramana Maharshi, who is a Vedanta mystic teacher, and he said, Hindu, and he said that the greatest gift that we can give to the world is our own self-realization. So our own awakening is the greatest gift that we can give to the world. And of course, it's not meant to sound, that was my grandmother speak. That's my grandmother, just so you know. Because my grandmother would say something like, isn't that selfish? Thanks, Grandma. But it's not, because as we, and for those, I mean, many of us have experienced that. The more we fall in love with ourselves, the more easier it is to just pour love into the world and share it with others and allow and encourage others to have that same experience of falling in love with themselves. So isn't that a beautiful thought?
It is. Oh, well, and it's beautiful when you practice it, too.
It is. Yeah. How's that going for you? How's that going
well,
for you?
Well, you know, I have my days and
yeah,
moments.
Yeah, me too.
Oi, oi, oi.
Yeah, I feel you. So I'd like to hear, since we're on that topic, let's hear a little bit more about your practice with this book.
Well, this entire year, I kind of took a break from my business to really go deep into my personal self-healing. Mm-hmm. And then this book showed up. And as I'm reading, I'm like, oh, I could feel the energy. Maybe I'm weird, but I know I'm weird. I could feel the energy of love that was coming through the pages. And the more I sat in my daily spiritual practice before meditation and just allowed that vibration of love to fill all the cells of my body, to flow in my bloodstream, to fill the physical, mental, emotional, the happier and the healthier, which is showing up with my doctors now, mm-hmm. I'm becoming. And so that I attempt to do it daily, just allow that high vibration of love, whatever that looks and feels like for me. And I have a feeling it might look and feel different for everybody. But to practice that, and so I'm very committed to practicing that now because I want the rest of my life to be healthy, happy, whatever else Bill said, harmonious. But I also want to be prepared for when it's my turn.
To cross over.
Right.
Yeah.
Because the thing that happens if you're not prepared, if you're stuck in, and with this pandemic, it's giving people lots of choice points, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can choose to be happy anyway. You can choose to be angry and shame or blame people. You can choose to hide out in your home. You can choose to go out and do stuff that I wouldn't recommend you do. But, you know, so all these choice points. And if you're stuck in that place of shaming, blaming, being angry at the world, which many of us are right now with the whole thing, that crosses over with you. And so the initial thing that happens when we cross over, we don't go right into the spirit world. There has to be a transition place, Jordan calls the landing place. And it's not purgatory, everybody, just get that out of your head. It's a place where you, as the soul, disembodied now, can acclimate that you no longer have this physical body, and because you're immediately propelled into the high frequency of love. If you're not prepared for it, your mind that creates the beliefs, just like we do here, right, that projects your story out into your life, right, does it like that, you know? And so if you have scary stuff going on inside, like being afraid of death, when you cross over, you will relive that for a little while until you can acclimate and begin to hear the vibrational tone of love, because that's the way we all communicate, whether we're in body or disembodied, but it's even a higher frequency when you cross over. So there's this place where in that acclimation, you know, I just am gonna invite everybody who wants to take this class or just read the book to begin to practice love, because that makes that transition a little more seamless and you don't have to be stuck in your own mental mental hell. I'm being very nice.
Oh. Mental hell, I like that.
Or the garbage in your head.
Yeah, I got that. So, you know, this actually, what you were saying about this book and the afterlife reminds me very much of what we teach in Science of Mind in this. I mean, y'all sitting out there, let's do a show of pinkies, right? We do a show of pinkies when we might be embarrassed. Okay, I didn't ask the question yet. But somebody out there, sure, they're going to say yes. Have you ever tried to give love to somebody and they just can't accept it?
Oh.
They just, okay, yeah. Oh, there's a big pinky over
yeah.
there. yeah. You know, and I think that's part of what you're saying, Susan, is that when we cross over, there's infinite love, as there is infinite love here, too, by the way. We just, you know, the thing that I often say, right? I think I say this for every interview, so why should you be the exception? is to quote the Gospel of Thomas, which says, the kingdom of heaven, which is another name for love, is spread upon the earth, but we cannot see it, right? And so why not learn to be receptive to love now so that we can appreciate it now? And then, as Susan was saying too, also in as we cross over, we'll be more receptive to the language of love, which is the only form of communication, according to this guy, in the afterlife. I would be willing to say that it's really the only form of real communication here. It's everything is love in disguise, but it's up to us to kind of cultivate the receptors, the receptive capacity to receive it as love, right? Again, that question, have you ever tried to give love and it wasn't perceived as love? Sometimes that happens when we set boundaries, right? You set a boundary and people think you're a horrible person and you're mean and you're not loving and you're just plain evil, right? and it's really just love, you know? And we've probably done the same thing ourselves. Speaking of the same thing we've done ourselves, one of the fascinating things I found about this book is in the past life review and what happens when we go over our lives. Would you like to say a little bit about that? Now, don't scare them. It's actually a beautiful thing.
It's actually some of what I've been doing this year in my own personal healing is reviewing my life, right? And so once you've acclimated, before you actually re-enter the spirit world, there is a life review of what, because we come down with our individual soul purpose of what we want to learn here and how we want to grow and evolve while we're incarnated. So the review is about, did you tick those points? Did you do that? But what you get to do, there's no escaping it, is review all the times that you have harmed someone else. And what occurs is in that review, you get the opportunity to experience how that harm affected that individual. And in that experience, you learn more compassion, you learn more of what you don't want to do next time, but it is throughout the lifetime. But you also get to experience all the fun, joy stuff that you did with mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. But in order for us to learn, one of the things Jordan says in the book is we incarnate so we can learn to love in spite of the pain.
Right.
And the circumstances mm-hmm. and what we think is happening, to love through all that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a big task.
That is a big task. And what I want to say also about the business, about the life review, in terms of looking at the ways that we may have hurt other people, first of all, what a beautiful thing to do starting right now, and what a beautiful thing to do with a sense of joy versus judgment. When Susan first told me about that, and when I read it in the book, I think, now I'm not perfect at this by any means. I have a lot of judgment still. Probably, you know, as long as we're in a human body, we'll have this brain that we have that is programmed to judge. Right now, I'm kind of judging the lights that keep going out. But anyway, it's the capacity to do it from a sense of love, and I actually felt a little bit of excitement of thinking about looking in the afterlife or in this life and saying, "Wow, I hurt that person. This is such a great opportunity for me to forgive myself uh-huh. and for me to recognize the impact that I can have upon people, either positive or negative." You know, in this center, we speak a lot about the ripple effect. And that's another thing that he says in the book, is that if we do an action, let's say I do something to Susan. I won't do it now. I do something to Susan, and yet she will carry that into her life, and it'll affect the people in her life and beyond and beyond and beyond and beyond. And that happens both with positive things and with negative things. So what a great opportunity for self-reflection and to look at the long-range impact of what we do. And it just, I don't know, to me it just feels so, it doesn't feel shaming, it feels empowering. It feels like, wow, this world is challenging right now. There's a lot going on, not only with the pandemic, but a lot of, as do I need to elaborate? Probably not. A lot of conflict all over the world, not only in America, but all over the world. And how can I be part of the solution? How can I send out ripples that will bless the world versus curse the world? What a wonderful, empowering way that is to go through life, right?
Yeah. Well, and I don't know about anybody else, but I am my harshest judge right now. You know, I mean, I one little thing and I go on about it for a week in my head.
Yeah.
But the great news is when you're in your life review, the afterlife has no judgment because the vibration of love is so high. Everyone is accepted, and anything that you've done that may have seemed bad in this lifetime is not judged. You just get to review it and relive it, and then you can make a different choice next time, mm-hmm. right? So that to me was like freedom.
Yeah.
Because I am the, you know, I'm the judge of my life right now.
Yeah. So. Me too.
Yeah.
Show of pinkies. Anybody? Yeah.
So Bonnie, before we go on, I have an Ernest Holmes quote.
Oh, please, absolutely.
Those who've studied or worked with me know I'm an Ernest Holmes junkie. So there'll be Ernest Holmes handouts in this class.
And just for everybody, who is Ernest Holmes?
Ernest Holmes is the founder of Science of Mind.
And that's what our church used to be called. It still is sort of. But
so you have Church of Religious Science.
Yeah,
it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
But he wrote this book called A Thing Called You, one of my favorite books. And I love to just open up a book. And anyway, he says, and it's talking about setting boundaries or barriers and living this life. And he said, if you knew as you know that you live, that this barrier were only a thing of thought or belief, the first half of your journey would be accomplished. Now, he's talking about us living here on planet Earth, being incarnated, but it sounds interesting, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. That which obstructs your passage is vapor, the vapor of unbelief. It is dense only with the denseness of doubt. It is filled with the thoughts of the ages. There is a lamp within you already lighted. As you walk through the tunnel of darkness, the darkness will disappear because of this light. You will find that the other half of yourself, you will find the other half of yourself, and you will discover that this tunnel is in your own mind. Now, doesn't that sound like making your transition, right? But he wasn't talking about that. He was just talking about how do you live life here and deal with your beliefs and the beliefs of the ages, which is kind of what the pandemic to me is about too, is we get to face all those accumulated beliefs and the stuff that's going on all over the planet right now. There's all sorts of stuff that we get to look at.
Yeah. So now that was Ernest Holmes, right? Who is a rather, I love Ernest Holmes dearly, and his writing is a little
It can feel
dense.
Antiquated, right?
It can feel a little dense for those of us that are maybe more dense than others. I tend to like things in really simple language. So if I were to translate that, to translate that, what would you say?
I would say that the thing that keeps us from really living our lives are our thoughts and beliefs and doubts. And they're not necessarily all our own. It's inherited.
Right.
Generational.
And
cultural.
Let me add to that translation because this was my favorite part where Ernest Holmes said that that stuff is just vapor.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that cool?
Just kind of dissipates, right?
Yeah. Yeah. How do you get it to dissipate when you, or how do you
well,
work
first
with
I
it?
Have to remember to breathe.
Okay. Yeah.
So that I can then just kind of mentally just allow it to blow through me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's, never mind. So I'll bring in another method too, because I asked you, now I'm asking
you. Yeah, you're going to share.
I'm going to share. Okay, so the way that I tend to do it is to welcome it. And it sounds like there's part of your practice too, right?
Well, yeah, you talked about it a few weeks ago, and I tried to welcome it, and I'm still working on that.
Well, you know, you welcome it so you can see it. And if we resist it, then it'll grow horns and a tail. we don't want that to happen. So I just welcome it, and then I let it go. But I do like the idea of considering it that it's vapor, because it can feel really solid. It can feel really real, right? You know, think of a negative thought that you have about yourself or about the world or whatever. And doesn't that feel like reality?
Oh, yeah.
But the thing is that we're telling ourselves that it's reality. And there's a much greater reality that's available for us if we could just let let that become vapor. Welcome it, see it, be with it. You don't have to adopt it and give it a home or take it to dinner. Just see it. And then just realize that it's nothing. Realize it's native nothingness and just let it go. Let it go. And I loved it in this book that they say, and again, you're much more well-versed in it than I am, but they keep saying that our purpose here is to learn. Our purpose here is to learn, and the primary learning, it sounds like, is to be in love and joy,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this welcoming thing I just got in my head now, thank you, Bonnie.
Sure.
Is, for me, it's about facing the things I fear most.
Yes.
Which are the dark corners of me that I fear most. If I looked at that, maybe I might prove that I really am a, you know, not a good person or whatever. So that looking at the thing that I fear is like looking at the, seeing it as a vapor that can disappear.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because, and let me tell you why else that's really powerful. We know each other really well. So, you know, the other thing about that too is that so often we're looking outside of ourselves for the things that are wrong with our lives. Mm. And what we've done in metaphysical teachings in the past is to use what's outside and say, well, I'm causing this. So then we turn the shame inside, right? But what if we're just saying, oh, look at this reflection. You know, when I've been, let me see if I can tell this story succinctly. I've been writing about some encounters with difficult people that I've had. I'm writing this little memoir, and I'm writing about encounters with difficult people. And what I am coming as I'm working through this and writing this is like, oh my goodness, those rejecting people were a reflection of my own self-rejection. So it's not like those people are bad. It's not like I was bad. It's just I was in a habit of self-rejection. And as soon as I started healing my self-rejection, the rejecting people either went away or they had no power to reject me because I already felt so at peace with myself that it didn't matter whether they rejected me. Does that sound about right to you?
Yes, and I love that you shared that because that was my morning practice for me.
Really?
Is I do tapping, EFT, and I'm tapping away, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm ashamed of myself in that particular moment about something, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, let's just get this taken care of
because
you know, it's again, going back to just being love, it's not worth that self.
Flagellation.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was going to.
Yeah, I know what you're going to say.
I'm not looking at you.
Yeah. But, and again, I just want to be really clear that it's when we're ashamed of ourselves, when we're looking at our inner rejector, it's loving it. It's like if you had a little child or a pet or something that was, you know, I don't have children, but, you know, if you have a dog that's chewing its own tail, you don't hate the dog for chewing its own tail. You just love the little puppy, and you just say, oh, my goodness, you don't have to hurt yourself this way, right? We can say that to ourselves every day we encounter something. Every day we're feeling that darkness either outside of us or within us. We can say, you don't need to hurt yourself in this way. There's so much more love for you, right here and right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Glad we agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Susan, this went really fast, and
we're
almost done. So let me just we actually covered just about everything
on my list
accidentally, yeah. But just tell us, what is the most important thing for us to know?
In general, or about this book?
About this book.
Well, I think that those that are courageous enough to take the class and/or just read the book, your world will be rocked a bit, and that's good, so that you can let go of those beliefs that you might carry from ancestral stuff. So I think it is the door that can open our hearts to really accessing a higher love now while we're still here.
That's wonderful. And if you can't take the class, that's fine. If you can't read the book, that's fine. There are many doors, you know, this idea that let me misquote the Bible again. In my house there are many mansions. I think I got that somewhat right.
Yeah, you did.
Meaning that there are many realms, many paths, many ways to access the love that's within us, but it's always with us, always, all the time. And actually our lives are an invitation to access the greater love that is yet to be, the greater love that is already but is yet to be present for us. But we get to have that. We get to have that more and more every single day. The only thing is that we have to do the work. We have to open ourselves up and be willing to love ourselves and to live in love.
I got chills as you're saying that, Bonnie.
Thank you.
So good.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Okay, well, I guess, Susan, I'll do a prayer. And
can I say one more thing?
Yes.
So for those that are interested in taking the class, it starts tomorrow night, Monday, the in-person class. And I want everybody to know we are doing what we do here, masked up, 6 feet. It's going to be safe. So if you really want to be in the room with some other people, I invite you. It will be as safe as we can make it. And the other class is on Zoom Tuesday mornings, starting this week.
Perfect. Thanks, Susan. Let's give her some love. All right. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure talking to you. Okay. So let's go ahead and we'll do a prayer just to anchor in this spaciousness. And just trusting and knowing that there truly is this one perfect life that is the life of love. This life that embraces all of us, that encircles all of us, that fills us, that lives through us, that lives and moves and has its being, has its essence through everything. Whether it's seen or unseen, that love is there. And so today, just for a moment, just for now, we anchor into this perception of love, into this knowing of the love that we are, and to the love that is all things. So from this place of anchored in the essence of love, anchored in the grace of being, held in the embrace of the divine, let us look at our lives. Let us look at our lives with grace and tenderness, with great self-forgiveness, with forgiveness for others, and trust and know that everything is all right. Everything is progressing as it should. Everything is peace, grace, and understanding unfolding. Today, let us cultivate the eyes to see it, the heart to welcome it, the capacity to share it, and the willingness to be it. The willingness to be it, even when it feels like it's difficult, trusting and knowing that there is something greater within us that is always love. And so we gain access to that portal of entry to allow that love to inform us from the inside out and to shine its light upon the world. How wonderful it is to know that we can apply this, that these things we do and many more. And what that means is that we take this message of love, and apply it to all of our individual circumstances, and that it ripples endlessly into the world, into infinity, into the universe, the cosmos, and beyond. And so I'm just so grateful for this opportunity to practice love, so grateful for this opportunity to remember love, and so grateful for this opportunity to be love, share love, and serve love. I'm so thankful for the transformation that I know is occurring right here and right now in this spiritual center. I give thanks to all paths to God. I give thanks for this teaching, but also to synagogues, temples, mosques, ashrams. I give thanks for fundamentalists, atheists, for all expressions of the One. I give thanks to the animal kingdom and nature and the stars and the sky and the sun. And with a heart that is so filled with love, so filled with compassion, so filled with awe and wonder at the being that we are, I say thank you, Spirit, thank you, love, and I release these words into the divine mystery. And together we say, and so it is.